jogging suit and whistling to herself. She returned my wide smile, lifting a hand to wave as I made my way up the front walk. I was so immersed in all this, the night, the sleep, the morning, that I didn't even see my dad until I was about to walk right into him. But there he was, in the foyer, at this early hour, already showered and dressed. "Hey," I said, "you're up early. Did inspiration strike here or something? Ready to start another book already?" He glanced up the stairs. He said, "not exactly. Actually, I was just... I'm headed out." "Oh," I stopped. "Where are you going? Campus?" A pause. Right then, in that too long beat of silence, I got the first inkling that something was wrong. "No, I'm going to a hotel for a couple of nights." He swallowed, then looked down at his hands. His face was tired. "Heidi and I, we have some things to work out, and we decided this was the best thing. For now."
"You're leaving?"
Even the word sounded wrong, said aloud. "It's only temporary." He took in a breath, then let it out. "Trust me, this is better. For the baby, for everyone. I'll just be at the Condor. We can still see each other every day."
"You're leaving?" I said again. Still weird.
He bent down, picking up the bag I'd not spotted until now, which was by the stairs. "It's complicated," he said. "Just give us some time, okay?" I just stood there, speechless, as he walked past me to the door, pulling it open. Here I was, with finally a chance to say everything I hadn't 2 years earlier, the do-over of all do-overs. I could have asked him to reconsider, to think of other options, to stay. And yet nothing came. Nothing. I just watched him go, again. I stood there for a long time, thinking this had to be a joke. It wasn't until I had watched him pull out of the garage, flip down his sun visor, and drive off that I walked over and locked the door. When I went upstairs, Heidi's room was closed. But as I passed Isby's room, I heard something. Not surprisingly, at first, I assumed it was a cry. But listening another minute, I realized it wasn't. Tentatively, I pushed open the door, peering in. She was in her bassinet, looking up at her mobile, waving her arms around, not wailing, not shrieking, even though these would have been perfectly acceptable and expected any day, but especially this one. Instead, she was just murmuring, making little baby noises. I went closer to the edge of her bassinet and peered down at her. For a moment, she kept kicking, intent on the ceiling. But then she suddenly looked at me. Her face relaxed, changing entirely into something new. Something amazing. A smile. Chapter 13. "I didn't even want to call you," I heard Heidi say. "I was sure you'd just tell me you told me so." For 3 hours, I'd been up in my room, trying to fall back asleep, but with no luck. Instead, I'd just lain there, remembering it all again. Waking up so happy with Eli. My walk home, and then being blindsided by my dad's departure, take two. But of all these images, it was Isby's smile, so sweet and unexpected, that had stuck with me the most. Whenever I closed my eyes to try and sleep, it was all I could see.
No, not really, Heidi continued. But I wouldn't blame you. It's just such a mess. I still can't believe any of this is happening. I walked past the table, where she was sitting, the baby in her arms, and headed to the cupboard to get myself a mug. Outside, it was another bright and sunny day, gorgeous like all the others. Hey, Heidi said suddenly, glancing at me. Let me call you back. No, I will. Okay, then you call me. 10 minutes. All right. Bye. She hung up, and I could feel her watching me as I poured myself a cup of coffee. Finally, she said, So, Auden, can you sit down a sec? I have to talk to you about something. She sounded so sad and worried I could barely stand it. It's okay, I already know, I said, turning around. I talked to Dad. Oh. She swallowed, looking down at the baby. Well, that's good. What did he... Isby suddenly let out a little squawk. Instead of crying, though, she just buried her face in Heidi's chest, closing her eyes. He said you guys had some stuff to work out, I said, and that he was staying at the Condor for a while. She nodded, her face looking pained. So, she said, are you doing okay? Me? I said. I'm fine. Why wouldn't I be? Well, this is kind of unsettling, I'm sure, she said. You can talk to me anytime, all right? If you have questions or concerns, I'm fine, I said again. Really? Just then, I heard a buzzing noise. Heidi's phone. She glanced at it, then sighed, putting it to her ear. Hello? She said. Hi, Elaine. No, I got your messages. How are you? Right. Of course. Well, to be honest, I haven't had much of a chance to think about the bash yet. She stood, shifting Isby in her arms, and walked over to the glass doors, still talking. I sat there, thinking of how I watched my dad driving away earlier, the way it felt like another do-over, but with the same outcome. Maybe some things could never change, or be fixed, even with time. A moment later, Heidi returned to the kitchen, putting her phone down on the counter. That was Elaine, the chair of the Colby Visitors Council, she said in a flat voice. She wants a theme for the beach bash, and she wants it now. The beach bash? I said. It's this annual event we have at the end of every summer, she explained, sitting down again. It's in the hall on the boardwalk. We sell tickets. All the merchants participate. It's the last big thing of the summer, and... for some reason, I always volunteer to organize it. Really? It's total masochism. She shook her head. Anyway, last year I did a pirate theme, which was kind of cute. The year before, we did a whole Renaissance thing. But this year, I mean, what am I going to do? I'm not exactly in a festive place right now. I watched her as she ran a hand over Isby's cheek, then tucked the blanket more tightly around her. You'll think of something. Just then, her phone rang again. She picked it up, settling it between her ear and shoulder. Hi, Morgan. No, it's fine. I was just talking to Elaine. She sighed, shaking her head. I know. And I appreciate that. But it's just... I can't believe this, you know? Last year at this time, all I wanted was for Robert and me to get pregnant, and now... She gulped, then moved a hand to cover her face, even as I heard whoever was on the other end start talking, their voice low and soothing. I pushed out my chair, then put my cup in the sink, as once again I found myself on the outside, watching something I'd never really known and didn't understand. Most perplexing of all, though, was the tightness of my own throat and the sudden lump I felt there. I pushed back my chair, slipping out of the room, into the foyer, thinking again of my dad walking out that same door, bag in hand. It was terrible and awful when someone left you. You could move on, do the best you could. But like Eli had said, an ending was an ending. No matter how many pages of sentences and paragraphs of great stories led up to it, it would always have the last word. By the time I left the house 2 hours later, Heidi and the baby were both sleeping. The house seemed almost peaceful, if you didn't know better. I, however, felt entirely unsettled, which made no sense, because first, Heidi was not my mother, and second, when this had happened with my parents, years earlier, I'd been just fine. Sure, I was disappointed and a little sad, but from what I remembered, I'd adapted pretty quickly to the new arrangements. Aside from the whole not sleeping thing, of course, but that had been going on already. What I didn't remember was the weird, panicky feeling, now still lingering, that had come over me watching my dad drive away from the house earlier. It was the way I usually felt around midnight, knowing that so much of the night was still to come and I had to find a way to fill it. The certainty of time passing so slowly until daylight. Thank God I had work to do. I'd actually never been so happy to walk into Clementine's, which was bustling with customers in a late afternoon rush. Maggie, consulting with a mother and daughter on some jean shorts, waved as I passed, grabbing the receipts and invoices on my way to the office. Once inside, I shut the door, flicked on the light, and prepared myself to buckle down into the numbers until closing. I'd just managed to lose myself in the check register when my phone rang. "Mom," the caller ID said. I watched the screen, the little phone jumping up and down as it logged one ring, then another. For a moment, I considered answering and telling her everything. Then, just as quickly, I realized that this was the worst possible idea ever. It would be like Christmas and her birthday rolled into one, the satisfaction she'd get, and I just couldn't take her smugness. And besides, she'd hung up on me the day before, making it more than clear that she didn't want to know me. Now it was my right to distance myself as long as I wanted. For the next 2 hours, I immersed myself in Heidi's books, more grateful than ever for the dependability and static nature of numbers and calculations. When I finished the register and the payroll, I turned my attention to the desk, which had been cluttered since the day I started. I could almost feel my blood pressure dropping, bit by bit, as I organized Heidi's pens, throwing out the ones that didn't work and making sure the rest had caps snugly on and were all facing upright in the pink mug where they lived. Then I moved on to the top drawer, sorting little scraps of paper, stacking random business cards into neat piles, and collecting all the paper clips into an empty Band-Aid box I found lying nearby. I was just about to tackle the next one when there was a tap on the door and Maggie stuck her head in. "Hey," she said, "Esther's going to Beach Beans. You want anything?" I reached into my pocket, pulling out my wallet. "Large triple shot mocha." Her eyes widened. "Wow, you pulling an all-nighter or something?" "No," I said, "I'm just kind of tired." She nodded, running a hand through her hair. "I hear you. My mom started in on me first thing this morning about my roommate forms. Apparently she wants me to fast-track my pick because she's worried otherwise we won't have enough time to properly coordinate our linens. As if anyone else cares about that. I had a flash of my own mother, her clipped tone when I dared to question her choice of the Pembleton program. That's what she's worried about? She's worried about everything, Maggie said, flipping her hand. In her mind, if I don't have the perfect college experience, it will be an unparalleled tragedy. That's not such a bad thing, though, I said. Is it? She sighed. You don't know my mother. I'm never, you know, enough for her. Enough? Girly enough, she explained. Because I was so into dirt bikes. Social enough, because I only had one boyfriend all through high school and didn't play the field. Now I'm not embracing college enough. And it hasn't even started yet. Tell me about it, I said. My mom's riding me about the roommate thing, too. Except she wants me to enroll in some program where you do nothing but study 24/7, and fun is not allowed under any circumstances. Really? I nodded. I should sign up for that. My mom would lose her mind. I smiled. Then the front door chime sounded, and she looked down at the money in her hand. Large triple shot mocha, she said. I nodded. I'll let Esther know. Thanks. The door shut back with a click, and I pulled open the second desk drawer. Inside was a stack of old checkbook registers, topped with a couple of yellow legal pads, covered with scribbles. As I pulled them out, I glanced at the writing, which was clearly Heidi's. There were lists for inventory, various phone numbers, and a few pages in, this. Caroline Isabel West. Isabel Caroline West. Emily Caroline West. Ainsley Isabel West. Each was written carefully. You could almost feel her deliberation as she added them, one by one. I thought back to the day she'd admitted her dislike of the name Thisbe, and how I and my mother had judged her for giving in to it anyway. My father was selfish. He got what he wanted, and even then it wasn't enough. I closed the pad, pushing it aside and digging down deeper into the drawer. There were various invoices, which I set aside to file properly. A flyer for the previous year's annual Colby Beach Bash. Ahoy, mateys! And at the very bottom, a stack of pictures. Here was Heidi, with a paintbrush dabbed with pink paint, standing with a wide smile in front of a white wall. Heidi again, posing before the front door, the Clementine sign arcing over her head. And finally, at the very bottom, a shot of her with my dad. They were on the boardwalk, her in a white dress, her belly round and full, him with his arm around her. The date stamp was early May, just a few weeks before Isby was born. Auden? I jumped. Somehow Esther had managed to slip in the door right behind me. Oh, I said, looking down at the drawer, the contents spread across the desk. I was just... Your caffeine, she said. She was holding out the cup to me when suddenly something blurred past behind her. Something red, which then crashed against the end of the hallway with a loud, bouncy bang. Hey, Esther yelled out the door. What the hell was that? What do you think? I heard a male voice. Adam, I thought, yell back. She opened the door wide. Just as a red rubber ball rolled slowly past in the opposite direction, heading back toward the sales floor. Oh, man. Seriously?
That's right, Adam hollered. Kickball, tonight. Get ready to get wet.
And who, I heard Maggie say, decided this?
Who do you think?
Esther stepped out into the hallway, picking up the ball.
Not Eli.
Yep. I heard footsteps, and then Adam came into view, holding out his hands. Esther handed over the ball, and he nodded at me.
Came in late today, with this under his arm. He actually seemed cheerful.
Really?
Yep. We were all totally freaked out.
He gave the ball a bounce, but he was serious. First game of the season, tonight after closing. Drawing for second base commences sharply at 10:05.
Oh, God, Maggie groaned, joining them in the hallway. If I have to be second base, I'm not playing.
That, Adam said, pointing at her, is a quitter attitude.
Last time I got totally soaked, she protested.
Last time was over a year ago. Come on. Eli's finally pulling out of this thing. The least you can do is get a little wet.
It is pretty major that he's up for it, Esther said to her. I wonder what changed.
I started to turn back to the desk, taking another sip of my drink, but not before I saw Maggie look right at me.
Who knows? Adam said. Let's just be glad and get on with it. See you at 10.
And with that, he was gone, bouncing the ball as he went. Esther sighed, then followed him, but I could feel Maggie's eyes still on me as I carefully stacked everything back in the drawer, stuffing the pictures in on top.
Hey, she said. You all right?
Yeah, I said. I'm fine. This should have been true. After all, I'd had the same night as Eli, and he'd woken up with a whole new attitude. I should have been just coasting and happy, more ready than anyone to jump into kickball, especially with Eli there. And yet, as the 9 o'clock dance passed, and the minutes of the next hour ticked down, I could feel my stomach getting tighter and tighter. At 10 on the nose, Maggie appeared in the doorway to the office, keys in her hand.
Come on, she announced. The second base drawing is in 5 minutes, and believe me, you don't want to get stuck with it. You're basically in the water.
Oh, I said. Actually, I think I'm going to stay late tonight. I have this payroll thing to do and some filing. She looked at me. Then at the pens arranged neatly in the jar next to my elbow.
Really?
Yeah, I'll be along eventually.
Eventually, she repeated.
I nodded, then turned back to the desk. Her voice was flatter as she said,
All right, we'll be waiting for you.
Finally, she left. And I busied myself labeling some file folders as she and Esther shut down the registers and headed outside. Once the door was locked behind them, I pushed back from my desk. After 15 minutes of just sitting there, I went out to the now dark store, walking up to the front windows. Everyone was gathered just down the boardwalk, at the main entrance to the beach. I could see Maggie sitting on a bench next to Adam and Esther beside him. Wallace and some other guys from the bike shop I knew by sight, if not by name, were milling around, joking with one another. I watched as they said something to Leah when she showed up, and she rolled her eyes, swatting at them before Maggie slid over to make room for her. More and more people came along, some I recognized, others I didn't. But then, suddenly, everyone began to move in closer, converging. And I knew Eli had arrived. He had on the same blue hoodie he was wearing the first time I saw him, the red ball tucked under one arm. His hair was loose,
blowing over his eyes, and as he approached, he bounced the ball once, catching it as he turned his head, scanning the assembled group. When he turned, looking behind him right at Clementine's, I stepped back from the window, out of sight. After a moment of discussion, teams were organized, and some sort of decision was made. From the looks of it, Adam came out on the losing side, if the jeers and pointed fingers in his direction were any indication. Then, en masse, everyone headed onto the beach, with one group assembling by the dunes, while another spread out across the sand. Adam, I saw, took his place right by the surf itself, reaching down to roll up his pant legs, while Eli moved to the center, the ball still in his hands. He was just rolling out the first pitch when I turned and went back to the office. An hour later, I went out the back door, then made my way across a parking lot and down two alleys before finally popping out by the gas grow. I'd been planning to just go home, thinking Heidi might need the company. But instead, I found myself walking back to the boardwalk. I sat down on a bench in front of the Last Chance, which was still bustling, to watch the game from a distance. Just as I arrived, Leah was up. She kicked the ball far and long, out into the water, and a guy I didn't recognize, now at second base, dove in after it. Auden? I jumped, then turned slowly, bracing myself. Of course Eli would sneak up on me, especially when I was doing my best to stay lost. But as I turned, I saw instead the last person I ever would have expected. My former almost prom date, Jason Talbot. He was in khakis and a collared shirt, hands in his pockets, smiling at me. "Hey," I said, "what are you doing here?" He nodded back at the restaurant behind him. "Just finishing up some dinner. I've been sitting in there for the last 15 minutes, wondering if that was you, but I wasn't sure. I didn't think I'd seen your name on the list for the conference, but..." "Conference? The FCLC? It just started today. Isn't that why you're here?" I said, "no, my dad lives nearby." "Oh, right. Well, that's great." There was a sudden burst of voices from down the boardwalk. We both looked over, just in time to see Maggie running the bases, laughing, while Adam started to wade out into the water. "Wow," Jason said. "Kickball. Haven't seen that since third grade." "So, what's the FCLC again?" I asked. "Future College Leadership Course," he replied. "It's a month-long series of lectures, workshops, and symposiums with incoming freshmen from schools all around the country. It's basically designed to give attendees skills they'll need to make an impact on their campuses from day one." "Wow," I said. There was another round of cheering from behind him, but this time I didn't look. "That sounds great." "Oh, I think it will be. I've already met like 20 people from Harvard who are already involved in campus leadership," he said. "You know, you should check it out. I know you weren't that into student government, but it's a great networking opportunity. It's not too late to sign up, and there are tons of people from DeFreeze there." "I don't know," I said. "I'm kind of busy." "Oh, tell me about it," Jason replied, shaking his head. "I got the syllabi from my fall classes and have been reading already, and it's really intense. But everyone I've met is doing the same thing." I nodded, even as I noted that my heart was already beating a bit faster. "I bet," I said. "That's really what I'm hearing again and again, that you just can't come in on the first day of the semester and hit the ground running anymore."
Really?
Oh, yeah. You need to prep early and seriously.
I've been doing my reading, too, I said. I mean, between working and everything else.
Working?
I nodded.
What are you doing? Like internship stuff? Service projects?
I thought of the office at Clementine's, all that pink.
More business related. I'm working for a small business that's in the process of expanding, helping with accounting and marketing during the transition. I figured it would be a good way to experience some real-time economics while at the same time studying the larger trends.
Wow, he said, nodding. That sounds really interesting. Still, though, you should think about the FCLC. I mean, if you're here anyway, I think you'd be a real asset to the conversation.
There was a loud whoop noise from the beach, followed by a round of applause and laughter. I said, maybe I will.
Good. Jason smiled.
Look, I should get back to dinner, I guess. We were in the middle of this big discussion about class rank, the pros and cons, and I don't want to miss it.
Sure, I said. Of course. He took a step back, then paused.
Are you at the same number, though? Because while I'm here, maybe we could get together, you know, just to catch up, compare notes.
Everyone was coming off the beach now. I could see Maggie and Adam, who was soaked in front, with Leah and Esther following.
Yeah, I said.
Sure.
Great, he smiled again. So, I'll just see you soon.
I nodded. And then, before I could even begin to react, he was stepping forward, pulling me into a hug.
An awkward, too-much-elbow, face-full-of-fabric-softener hug, but at least it was over quickly.
But not quickly enough, because as he walked away, there was Eli, standing with the ball under his arm, watching me, his expression unreadable. For a moment, we just looked at each other, and I had a flash of that first long night near this same place.
Aren't they all? I thought.
Hey, I said. How was the game?
Good. He bounced the ball once. We won.
Two couples, dressed for a night out, walked between us, chattering happily among themselves. For a fleeting instant, I just wanted to fall in with them, go wherever they were going.
So, he said, coming closer. What happened?
I had to work, I said. We're behind on payroll, and there was all this filing.
No, he bounced the ball again. I mean to you.
Me?
He nodded. You're acting different. What's going on?
Nothing, I said. He kept his eyes on me, steady, unconvinced.
What, you mean that?
I said, nodding at the last chance, where Jason had now disappeared inside. He's just this friend of mine from home. My prom date, actually, although he ditched me at the last minute. Not that I was upset. We were never, like, serious. Anyway, he's down here for some conference and he saw me out here, so...
Auden. The way he said my name was like a brake, applied hard. I stopped in mid-breath.
Seriously. What's wrong?
Nothing, I said again. Why do you keep asking me that?
Because you were fine last night, he said. And then tonight you duck out and hide from me, and now you won't even look me in the eye.
I'm fine, I said.
God, I just had to work. Why is that so hard to believe?
This time he didn't answer, but he didn't really have to.
It was a total lie, paper thin. And yet I stood there, holding on to it for dear life anyway.
You know, he said finally, if this is about what happened with your dad and Heidi...
It's not.
My voice was sharp, defensive. Even I could hear it. I told you I had to work. I have a lot on my plate right now, okay? I can't just spend my whole summer playing kickball. I have classes to prepare for and books to read. If I want to hit the ground running at DeFreeze this fall, I've been slacking off so much and now...
Slacking off, he repeated.
Yes, I looked down at my hands. It's been fun and all, but I'm totally behind. I have to get serious.
As I said this, down the boardwalk I could hear all those familiar voices, laughing, jeering, happy together. I knew it instantly, as the sound was much more familiar at a distance than from within it.
Right, Eli said. Well, good luck. Getting serious and all that.
There was something in his tone. Final, distant, exactly what I'd thought I wanted, that made me suddenly realize maybe I didn't.
Eli, I said quickly. Look, I just... But no words followed. I just let this hang there, open-ended, waiting for him to jump in, finish it, do the hard part for me. It was my dad's signature trick, and now I understood why. It was just so much easier than having to say what you didn't want to aloud. But Eli didn't fall in, doing the hard part for me. He just walked away. Not that this should have surprised me. What did he care if this sentence was finished or not? He was.
Chapter 14. 1:05 p.m. Just on a break from a panel, thought you might want to grab lunch.
3:30 p.m.
Are you free for dinner tonight? Last chance around 6?
10:30 p.m.
Heading back to the dorms. Talk to you tomorrow.
I put my phone down on the desk. Leah, who was paging through some receipts, glanced at the screen.
Well, she said, someone's popular tonight.
It's just this guy I know, I told her. From home.
Just a guy? She repeated. Is there even such a thing?
We were in the office after closing, where everyone was waiting for me to do a few last-minute things before locking up.
In this case, I told her, yes.
My phone beeped again. I sighed, turning it over.
10:45 p.m. If you have time to chat tonight, give me a call. Got some good ideas to run by you.
He seems awfully persistent, Esther observed.
I think he's just trying to make up for standing me up at prom, I said. Or something. I don't know. Really, this hadn't occurred to me until right at that moment, but now that I thought about it, it kind of made sense.
You got stood up on prom night? Maggie asked. She looked truly upset. That's horrible.
It wasn't quite that bad, I said. He called the day before, said he'd gotten invited to this big environmental meeting up in D.C. It was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
So is your senior prom, Leah said. It's a good thing you're blowing him off. He deserves it.
That's not why I'm... I sighed. I'm just not interested in revisiting that particular part of my past, that's all. My phone beeped again. This time, I didn't even look at it. Later, though, back at home, I studied my phone, reading over Jason's messages again. Maybe it would be my own kind of do-over to answer back. Go meet him. Try again for something I didn't get before. But unlike bowling and food fights and breaking curfew, I didn't feel like I'd missed out on Jason. Instead, what had happened, or not, with us was just a twist of fate. Meant to be. Like we hadn't even needed a first chance, much less a second one. A week earlier, at 11:30 p.m., I would have been out already an hour, just starting the night's adventures. These days, though, I was usually back at home in my room, hitting the books. That night Eli had walked away from me, I'd come home around midnight to find the entire house quiet. Isby was asleep in her room, and Heidi was down for the count, although she'd left her bedside light on. I'd gone to my own room, planning to just grab a few things before heading out, but then I'd remembered what Jason had said about reading ahead and hitting the ground running. The next thing I knew, I was pulling my suitcase out from under my bed. When I opened it up, the first thing I saw was the picture frame Hollis had given me, which I promptly pushed aside. Beneath it was my econ textbook. Within 10 minutes I was reading chapter one, a yellow pad half covered with notes beside me. It was so easy. Academics, like an old friend, had just waited patiently for me, and returning to it felt safe and right. Unlike all the things I'd been doing with Eli, which were new and challenging and way out of my comfort zone, studying was my strength, the one thing I did well, no matter what else was going badly. So instead of driving around that night, I stayed in my room, the window open beside me, reading chapter after chapter as the waves crashed below. Still, whenever I took a break to go get more coffee or hit the bathroom, I'd find myself glancing at my watch, wondering what Eli was up to. At midnight, probably the washroom. By 1:30, Park Mart. And then, who knew? Without me and my stupid quest to deal with, he could have been anywhere. Where I ended up, though, surprised me most of all. At 7 a.m., I jerked awake, lifting my head off my legal pad, where it had apparently dropped when I actually fell asleep at some point the night before. My neck was aching, and I had ink stains on my cheek. But none of these felt as odd as the sensation that I had actually slept at night for the second time in a row. I wasn't really sure I wanted to know why. Whatever the reason, this sudden change in sleeping habits, which continued over the next 3 nights, completely threw me off my schedule. For the first time in recent memory, I was awake and lucid in the morning. At first, I tried to just keep studying, but by day 3, I decided to go to Clementine's. "Oh my God!" I heard Maggie say as soon as I walked in. "This is unbelievable." I rolled my eyes, then slid off my sunglasses, bracing myself for the inevitable questions and required explanation of what I was doing there so early. Then I realized that she hadn't seen me at all. Instead, she, Leah, and Adam were crowded around a laptop, open on the counter, watching something on screen.
"Tell me about it," Adam said. None of us had any idea, not even Jake. He just got a text from someone saying they'd seen it online, and so he looked it up.
"What's the date on it again?" Leah asked, as Maggie hit a button, leaning in closer. "Yesterday. It was the Hopper Bikes exhibition thing in Randleton." They all focused on the screen again, not seeming to notice me as I came closer, picking up the previous day's receipts. I glanced at the screen. There was a bike going up a ramp, then down the other side.
"He looks good," Maggie said. "He looks great," Adam told her. "I mean, it was his first competition in over a year, and he placed second." Look at that, Maggie murmured. No kidding. It's serious vertical.
Adam shook his head.
I can't believe Eli just got on the bike after all that time and did that well. It's crazy.
I looked at the screen again. The figure on the bike was small, but now I noticed the longer hair sticking out beneath the helmet.
Well, Maggie said, maybe he didn't.
Meaning what?
She didn't answer at first. Then she said, just because we didn't see him riding didn't mean he wasn't.
Yeah, but, Adam said, to be that good, still, he'd have to have been practicing a lot. Someone would have seen something, unless he was, like,
doing it in the middle of the night or something. Leah finished for him. I glanced up. Both she and Maggie were looking at me, straight on. Adam, seeing this, looked at me, then back at them.
Wait, he said. What am I missing?
Did you know about this? Leah asked. About Eli competing again? I shook my head.
No.
You sure about that? Maggie said. You two seem to have a lot of secrets.
Yeah, I told her. I'm positive.
They were all still watching me as I picked up my receipts, then went back into the office, shutting the door behind me. I listened as they watched the video again and again, commenting on how impressive Eli looked, how much he had surprised everyone. Especially me. It made me realize how lucky I'd been to get the tiniest glimpse into what was in his head, like pushing a door open just enough for a sliver of light to fall through. At the same time, though, it made it clear how much still remained unexplored, unseen. Aside from glimpsing the video, I didn't want to see Eli. In fact, I was so embarrassed about how I'd acted and what I'd said that I took great pains to avoid the bike shop whenever possible. I came and went from Clementine's by the back door most of the time, claiming that way got me home faster. I wasn't sure whether Maggie and everyone else believed me, and didn't really care either. In a couple of weeks, I'd pack up for home, and then from there, DeFries. This part of my life, strange and transitory, was almost over. Thank God. Later that night, when I took a study break, Heidi had pulled the rocking chair to the sliding glass doors and had Isby swaddled and asleep in her arms, her phone at her ear.
I don't know, she was saying. Whenever we talk, he just sounds so defeated. Like he's convinced this won't work no matter what we do.
I know, but... She was quiet for a moment, and all I could hear was the rocking chair creaking back and forth, back and forth.
I'm scared it's too late, she said finally. Like, he's right, and this is unfixable. I know, you say it's never too late, but I'm not so sure.
My phone, which was in my back pocket, suddenly beeped. I pulled it out, checking the screen.
You free for coffee? I'm buying.
I read these words once, twice, three times. Never too late, I thought. Then there was another beep.
Name the place. I'm new here.
Jay.
Who's texting you so late?
Heidi called out as she came back inside, carrying Isby, her phone in her free hand.
Just my ex-prom date, I told her. It's a long story.
Really? She said.
What?
Oh my God!
I jumped, startled. Then looked behind me, expecting to see something crashing down or on fire.
What?
I said. What is it?
Prom!
Heidi shook her head. I can't believe we didn't think of it earlier. For the beach bash theme, prom night, it's perfect!
She flipped open her phone, punching in a few numbers. A second later, I heard someone pick up.
Prom, she announced to them.
There was a pause. Then,
for the theme! Isn't it perfect? Well, think about it. People can dress up and we can do a king and queen and play cheesy music and...
She kept talking. But I headed back upstairs to my room, where my books and notes were waiting. Once I settled onto the bed, though, I found I couldn't concentrate. So I sat back, breathing in some sea air. Then I saw my laptop on my bedside table. Before I could stop myself, I was booting it up and hitting Live Vid, the video site. Hopper Bikes Exhibition, I typed in. Randleton. 10 videos popped up. After scrolling through them, I found one tagged Stock and Ramp and clicked on it. It was the same one they'd been watching at Clementine's. I recognized the helmet and the background. I remembered what I'd seen at the jump park, and even to my untrained eye, what Eli was doing was different. There was a grace to it, an effortlessness, that made it clear how hard it really had to be. As he moved across the screen, each time going higher, higher in the air, I felt my heart jump. It was so risky and so scary, and yet at the same time, so beautiful. Maybe the truth was, it shouldn't be easy to be amazing. Then everything would be. It's the things you fight for and struggle with before earning that have the greatest worth. When something's difficult to come by, you'll do that much more to make sure it's even harder, if not impossible, to lose. The next morning, after about a week of awkward phone calls, I finally went to visit my dad at the Condor. I found him in his room with the shades drawn, sporting a desert island-style beard. After opening the door for me, he flopped onto the unmade bed, stretching his arms over his head and closing his eyes.
So,
he said, after emitting a long, loud sigh.
Tell me, how is my life without me?
Simultaneously, I resisted the urge to answer this question and to roll my eyes. Instead, I said, haven't you and Heidi talked?
Talk, he scoffed, flipping a wrist. Oh, we talk. But nothing ever really gets said. The bottom line is, we don't see eye to eye. I worry we never will.
The truth was, I didn't really want to know all the sticky details of their problems. It was enough to know they had them, and that they were big and unresolved. But since I was the only one there, I felt I had no choice but to wade in deeper. Is it about the baby? He sat up slightly and looked at me.
Oh, Auden, is that what she's saying?
She isn't saying anything, I told him, pulling open the heavy shades. I'm just asking because I want you guys to work it out. That's all. He watched me, studious, as I walked around his room, picking up coffee cups and fast food bags.
Your concern is intriguing, he said finally, considering I thought you didn't like Heidi.
What? I threw a couple of sticky ketchup-covered napkins in the overflowing trash can. Of course I do.
So you don't think she's some vapid, soulless Barbie doll?
No, I said, pushing aside the thought that, okay, this might have once been true. Why would you think that?
Because that's what your mother said, he replied, his voice heavy. And you two tend to think alike.
I was in the bathroom as he said this, washing my hands, and hearing it, I looked up. Then away from my own eyes in the mirror. Maybe this had once been true as well.
Not about everything, I said. Oh, but that's what is great about your mother, he mused, as I looked around for a clean towel to wipe my hands on. You always know what she's thinking. There's none of this guessing around, speculating, having to read all the hidden signs and codes. When she was unhappy, I knew it. But Heidi...
I stepped back into the room, sitting down on the other bed. Heidi what? He sighed again.
She hides everything, keeps it deep down, and you think everything's fine, but then one day, out of nowhere, it suddenly explodes in your face. She's not fine. She's unhappy. You haven't been doing enough after all. Oh, and you're the worst father ever, also.
I waited a beat or two before asking, did she actually say that, though?
Of course not, he snapped. But in marriage, all is subtext, Auden. The fact of the matter is that in her mind, I have failed her and Thisbe, from day one, apparently.
So you try again, I said, and do better. He gave me a sad look.
It's not that easy, honey.
What's the alternative, though? Just staying here alone?
Well, I don't know.
He got off the bed, walking over to the window and sliding his hands in his pockets.
I certainly don't want to make things any worse than I already have. It's possible they'd be better off without me. Even probable.
I felt my stomach twist unexpectedly. I doubt that, I said. Heidi loves you.
And I her, he said. But sometimes love isn't enough.
The weird thing was that what bothered me most about him saying this was that it was such a lame, throwaway line. He was a great writer. I knew he could do better. I've got to go to work, I said, picking up my bag from the bed beside me. I wanted to see how you were. He walked over to me, pulling me close for a hug. I could feel that beard, itchy and out of place, rubbing my forehead as he murmured,
I'm okay. I'll be okay.
Outside, I walked to the elevator and hit the button, which did not light up. I hit it again. Nothing. Then I stepped closer and bashed it with my fist. I realized, as it finally lit up and fast, that I was furious. No, heart-pounding, can't even think straight, pissed off. When I got inside the elevator, the doors closed, mirroring my reflection back at me. This time I looked at myself full on. It was the strangest thing, to be suddenly infuriated, like something he'd said or done had uncapped a valve within me, long sealed, and suddenly something was shooting out, gushing like a geyser. As I crossed the lobby to the boardwalk, all I could think was that regardless of the performance I'd just witnessed, it didn't make you noble to step away from something that wasn't working, even if you thought you were the reason for the malfunction. Especially then. It just made you a quitter. Because if you were the problem, chances were you could also be the solution. The only way to find out was to take another shot. I was almost to Clementine's before I realized how fast I was walking, passing people on both sides. When I finally pushed the door open, I was breathing so heavily and so flushed that Maggie jumped, startled when she saw me. Auden? She said. What's...
I need a favor, I told her.
She blinked at me. Okay, she said. What is it?
When I told her, I expected her to be confused, or maybe laugh at me. But she did neither. She just considered it for a moment and then nodded.
Yeah, she said. I can do that.
Chapter 15. It was, to say the least, embarrassing.
Now, see, Maggie said as I got up off the ground, that's what we don't want to happen.
Got it. I looked down, noting my newly scraped knee, which now matched my other one.
It just feels so weird.
I bet, she sighed.
I mean, there's a reason you're supposed to learn this when you're little.
Less self-conscious?
Less distance to fall.
She reached down, picking up the bike, and putting it back into a standing position. Once more, I climbed on, resting my feet flat on the ground.
Okay, she said. Try again.
We were at the clearing by the jump park, bright and early the following morning, and one thing was now clear. I did not know how to ride a bike. If I had, it would have come back to me, along with the confidence that I did know what to do once I was up on the pedals and rolling forward. Instead, each time I got moving, even at a snail's pace, I panicked, wobbled, and fell. I'd managed to go about 40 yards once, but only because Maggie was holding on to the back of the seat. As soon as she let go, I veered off into some bushes and wiped out once more. Of course I wanted to quit. I had since the first wreck, which had been over an hour earlier. It was completely humiliating to have to keep picking myself up off the ground and wiping sand and gravel off my knees, not to mention facing Maggie's cheerful, "Go team!" expression, which was usually paired with a thumbs up, even after I'd gone down hard. This was such a simple thing. Little kids did it every day, and yet I kept failing and falling.
You know, she said, after the next crash, which involved full body contact with a garbage can. Yuck. I'm thinking I'm approaching this the wrong way.
It's not you, I told her, picking up the bike again. It's me. I'm terrible at this.
No, you're not, she smiled at me, which made me feel even more pathetic. Look, riding a bike involves a great deal of faith. I mean, you're not supposed to be able to be aloft on two skinny rubber tires. It goes against all logic.
Okay, I said, picking some gravel off my elbow. Now you're really being condescending.
I'm not.
She held the bike as I climbed back on and flexed my hands over the bars.
But I do think that maybe we could use some reinforcements.
I looked at her. Oh, no. No way.
Auden, it's all right.
She pulled her phone out of her back pocket, flipping it open.
Please don't, I said. Leah will laugh me out of town. And Esther, she'll just feel sorry for me, which would be even worse.
Agreed, she replied, punching some keys. But I'm calling the one person you literally cannot make an ass of yourself in front of. It's guaranteed.
Maggie, seriously,
she hit another button.
Trust me.
At the time, I had no idea who she was talking about. But 10 minutes later, when I heard a car door slam in the parking lot behind us and turned my head, it made total sense.
This is a 911?
Adam said as he walked up.
You know you only text that when someone is dead or dying. You scared the crap out of me.
Sorry, Maggie told him, but I needed you here fast.
He sighed, then pulled a hand through his curly hair, which I now noticed was sticking up on one side. Also, there were sheet crease marks on his face.
Fine. So what's the emergency?
Well, she said, Auden can't ride a bike.
Adam looked at me, and I felt myself flush. Wow, he said solemnly. That is serious.
See? Maggie said to me. I told you he was the right person to call.
Adam came closer, checking out both the bike and me on it. All right, he said after a moment. So what method of instruction have you been using here?
Maggie blinked. Method of...
Did you start with the buddy system and then move on to assisted riding, or do assisted riding first with the intention of a slow, incremental build toward independent movement?
Maggie and I exchanged a look. Then she said, I just kind of put her on and let her go.
Oh, man, that's the fastest way to make a person hate the bike. He gestured for me to get off and roll it toward him, which I did. Then he climbed on. Okay, Auden, get on the handlebars.
What?
The handlebars. Climb on.
When I just stood there, clearly doubtful, he said,
Look, if you want to learn to ride a bike, you have to want to learn to ride a bike. And the only way to do that is to see how fun it is, once you know what you're doing. Hop on.
I shot a look at Maggie. When she nodded encouragingly, I eased myself up on the handlebars, trying to be graceful about it.
Okay, Adam said. Now hold on tight. When we get going really fast, you can let go, but only for a second, and only when you really feel ready.
I'm not letting go, I told him. Ever.
That's fine, too.
Then he started pedaling, slowly at first, and then a bit faster, so that the wind was blowing back my hair and ruffling my shirt. Once we reached the end of the parking lot, he hung a right and kept going.
Wait, I said, looking back at Maggie, who was watching us, her hand shielding her eyes.
What about...
She's fine, Adam said. We won't be gone long.
We were on the main road now, moving swiftly along the shoulder, the occasional car passing us on the left. The sun was fully up now, and the air smelled sweet and salty all at once.
Okay, Adam yelled as another car passed us. Tell me what you're feeling.
I'm hoping I don't fall off the handlebars, I told him.
What else?
I said as we bumped off the road onto the boardwalk.
I don't know. You have to be feeling something.
I considered this as we started down the boardwalk, which was mostly empty, save for a few early morning walkers and a bunch of seagulls, which scattered as we approached.
It's like flying, I said, watching them rise up.
Kind of.
Exactly, he said, picking up the pace a bit. The speed, the wind, and the best part is, it's all you doing it. I mean, it's me now, but it will be you, and it'll feel just like this, or even better, actually, because it will be you doing it, all on your own.
We were really going now, the boards clacking beneath us, and I leaned back farther, letting the wind hit my face straight on. To my right, the ocean was so big and sparkling, and as we whooshed along, it was a steady blue, blurring past. Despite my worry about falling and my various embarrassments, I felt a strange sense of exhilaration, and I closed my eyes.
See?
Adam said, his voice somehow finding my ears.
This is a good thing.
I opened my eyes, intending to respond to this, to tell him he was right, that I understood now, and how grateful I was that he'd given me this chance and this ride. But just as my vision cleared, I realized we were passing the bike shop, and turned my head, looking at it. The front door was open, and in the second we blew by it,
I could see the back lights were on and someone was standing at the counter. Someone holding a plastic coffee cup. Maybe we were going so fast that Eli didn't even see. Or if he did, had no way of knowing it was me. But regardless, for one instant, I decided to let go for real and held up my hands anyway. For the next week, Maggie and I practiced almost every morning. It was a ritual. I picked up two coffees at Beach Beans, then met her at the jump park clearing. At first, on Adam's advice, we incorporated what he called assisted riding, i.e., me pedaling with her holding on to the back of the seat. Then we worked up to her letting go for small increments, while still running behind, so I didn't topple over. Now we were increasing those periods, bit by bit, while I continued to work on my balance and pedaling. It wasn't perfect. I'd had a couple of wipeouts, and still sported scabs on both knees, but it was much better than that first day. More and more lately, I'd been realizing that my life had again shifted, almost reversing itself. I now stayed home at night, studying and sleeping, and was out in the early morning and afternoon, almost like a normal person. Unlike a normal person, though, I was still spending most of my time alone. If I wasn't at work or practicing with Maggie, I was at home, avoiding texts from Jason, which were still coming, although not with such regularity, thank God, and phone calls from my parents. I knew they both had to be wondering what was going on, as I hadn't talked to either of them in ages, ignoring their calls and subsequent messages. I knew this was childish, and for some reason this actually made it okay to me. Like it was another part of my unfinished quest, making up for lost time. Really, though, some part of me was worried that if I did speak to either of them, even for a moment, one word, whatever I'd barely tapped into that day leaving the Condor would spill out like a big wave, engulfing us all. The only family member I was talking to was Hollis, but even our contact was sporadic at best, if only because he was so caught up in his new life with Laura. If my dad's relationship was falling apart, and my mom's, as usual, never really even starting, Hollis was still bucking convention and his own history. Weird enough that he was still madly in love, long after he usually had lost interest and moved on. Now he'd done something else shocking. Hollis West. Even though I had dialed his number and so knew this was my brother, I was still taken aback by his professional tone. Hollis? Odd. Hey, hold on, let me just step outside. There were some muffled noises, followed by the sound of a door shutting. Then he was back. Sorry about that, he said. We're just on a break from this meeting. You and Laura? No, me and the rest of the personal finance specialists. Who? He cleared his throat. My co-workers. I'm at Maine Mutual now. Didn't Mom tell you? Vaguely, I remembered my mother saying something about a bank. I guess, I said. How long have you been there?
3 weeks or so, he said. It's gone fast, though. I'm really clicking here.
So, I said slowly, you like it?
Totally. I heard a horn beep. Turns out I'm really good at customer relations. I guess all that bullshitting around Europe did train me for something after all.
You relate to customers?
Apparently, he laughed. I got hired on as a teller, but after a week they moved me to the customer service desk. So I handle all the account changes and safety deposit applications, stuff like that.
I was trying to picture Hollis behind a desk at a bank, or anywhere,
But all I could see was that shot of him grinning in his backpack in front of the Taj Mahal. This was the best of times.
"So, Odd," he said, "I've only got a few minutes before I go back in. What's up down there? How's Dad and Heidi and my other sister?"
I hesitated, knowing I should tell him about my father moving out. He had a right to know. But for some reason, I didn't want to be the one to tell him. It was like my dad trailing off another sentence, leaving me to do his dirty work. So instead I said, "Everything's all right. How's Mom?" He sighed.
"Oh, you know, crabby as always. Apparently I have disappointed her beyond belief by turning my back on my independent spirit and joining the bourgeoisie."
"I bet."
"And she misses you."
Honestly, hearing this shocked me almost as much as hearing his new job title. "Mom doesn't miss anyone," I said. "She's completely self-sustaining."
"Not true."
He paused for a second.
"Look, Odd, I know you guys have had your issues this summer, but you should really try to talk to her. She's still having all this drama with Finn and..."
"Finn?"
"The graduate student. Car sleeper. I told you about him, right?" I thought of those black framed glasses.
"Yeah, I think so."
"You know the drill. He's in love with her, she won't commit, blah, blah, blah. Usually they scare off easy, but this one, he's tenacious. He's not giving up. It's kicking up all our issues."
"Wow," I said. "Sounds intense."
"Everything is where she's concerned," he replied.
"Look, Odd, I gotta get back inside for this brainstorming session, but seriously, give her another shot."
"Hollis, I don't..."
"At least consider it, then.
For me?"
I didn't feel like I owed Hollis all that much, to be honest. So I suppose it said something about his people skills that I still heard myself say, "All right, I'll think about it."
"Thank you. And hey, call me later, all right? I want to hear what else is going on."
I assured him that I would, and then he was gone, back into his meeting. And I kept my word, and did think about talking to my mom. I decided against it, but I did consider it. Then it was back to the same old, same old. I tried to steer clear of Heidi, who had thrown herself full throttle into planning the beach bash. Ignored my parents' messages. Read another chapter, did another set of study questions, turned off the light when I felt my eyes get heavy, and then lay there in the dark, never believing that sleep would come until the exact moment when it did. The only time I let my mind go to anything other than school and work, actually, was when I was on the bike. And then I thought only of Eli. Since that day we'd blown past him on the boardwalk, I'd seen him a handful of times. He was passing by the front windows of Clementine's as I took stuff out of the register, or standing in front of the shop, showing a bike to a prospective customer. It was easy to tell myself that we were only not talking because we were so busy with other things, and I could almost believe that. But then I'd remember what I'd said to him about slacking off, and the look on his face just before he'd walked away from me. And I knew otherwise. This was my choice, my decision. He was the closest thing I'd ever had to something or someone that mattered. But in the end, close didn't count. You were either in or you weren't. What I thought about most, though, when I was on the bike, was my quest. At the time, it had seemed like a silly little game, something to pass the time, but now I was understanding it was so much more than that.
Night after night, task after task, he'd help me to return to my past and make some things, if not everything, right. Eli had given me all these second chances, presented like a gift. In the end, though, I was one short. Still, as I pedaled around the jump park lot, Maggie either holding on or right behind me, I wished I could just show him this one thing. I knew it wouldn't make up for everything else. But for some reason, I wanted him to know anyway. So in the mornings, I practiced my riding, slowly gaining speed and confidence. At night, I sat in front of my laptop, searching for clips on live vid of him in one competition after another, watching him move across the screen so quick and sure, it hardly seemed like they could be related, my fledgling efforts and his complete skill and mastery. But at their core, they were the same thing. Each was about propelling yourself forward into whatever lies ahead, one turn of the wheel at a time. First, there was squealing, then giggling. But it wasn't until I heard the music start up that I put down my pen and went to investigate. It was 10:15, and I was doing what I always did in the evenings, these days, getting ready to do some schoolwork. After finishing up the books at Clementine's, I'd grabbed a sandwich from Beach Beans, which I ate alone in the kitchen, savoring the fact that I had the house to myself. Once I was settled, and 10 minutes into world economic theory and practices, though, I suddenly had company. The loud kind. I went halfway down the stairs, then peered into the kitchen to see a crowd. Heidi, in shorts and a black tank top, was piling plastic bags on the kitchen table as Isby, strapped in her stroller, watched. A blonde, Heidi's age, was popping a beer as another girl, a brunette, dumped some tortilla chips into a bowl. Maggie, Leah, and Esther were all seated around the table. More plastic bags piled up in front of them. There's a certain sound that can only be made by a group of women. It's not just chatter or even conversation, but almost a melody of words and exhalations. I'd spent a lot of my life listening to it from just this kind of distance. But still, it never failed to make me acutely aware of every bit of the space between me and its source. At the same time, though, this was where I preferred to be, which was why it was so unsettling when Heidi looked up and spotted me. "Auden!" she called out as someone turned up the music, which sounded like salsa, fast with a lot of horns. "Hey! Come join us!" Before I could react, everyone had turned and looked at me, making a fast retreat not just awkward but impossible. I said. "This is Isabel," she continued, pointing at the blonde who nodded at me. Then she gestured to the brunette. "And this is Morgan, my oldest friends in Colby. Guys, this is Auden, Robert's daughter." "So nice to finally meet you," Morgan said. "Heidi just raves about you. Raves." "Did you get my messages?" Heidi asked as she lifted Isby out of her stroller. "I tried to let you know we were coming, but your mailbox was full."
"Wow," Leah said, raising her eyebrows. "Someone's popular."
"Actually," I said as Esther upended a bag onto the table, spilling out a pile of little picture frames, "I'm making a bunch of calls right now."
"Oh, well, when you're done then."
Heidi reached over, taking the beer that Isabel was offering her as Morgan put the chips on the table. "We'll be here, I'm sure. We've got at least 300 favors to make."
300? Leah said. She narrowed her eyes at Maggie. "You said..."
"I said it would be fun, and it will be," Maggie replied. "What else were you going to do tonight, anyway?"
"A lot of things," It's ladies' night at Tally Ho.
No, 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 to Tally Ho, Esther said, picking up a picture frame.
Amen to that, Isabel agreed. That place gives me the skeevies.
Back in my room, I picked up my pen again and tried to immerse myself in the politics of global currency. After a few bursts of laughter from downstairs, I got up and shut the door. I could still hear the music through the floor, though, the beat insistent and distracting. Finally, I picked up my phone, flipping it open and dialing into my mailbox. Heidi was right. It was full, mostly with old messages from my parents I'd never gotten around to really listening to. I worked my way through them, one by one, my eyes on the dark ocean outside.
Auden, hello, it's your mother. I'll try you again later, I suppose.
Delete.
Hi, honey, it's your dad. Just taking a break from doing some revisions, thought I'd give you a call. I'll be here in the room all day if you want to call or drop by. I'll keep an eye out for you.
Delete.
Auden, this is your mother. Your brother is now working at a bank. I hope you are adequately horrified. Goodbye.
Delete.
Hi, Auden. Dad here again. I'm wondering if you might want to meet at the last chance. I'm getting a little sick of room service. Give me a call, okay?
Delete.
Auden, I'm getting tired of your voicemail. I will not be calling again until I hear from you.
Delete.
Honey, Dad again. I guess I'll call the house number. Maybe you're not answering this one anymore.
Delete.
They just went on and on, endlessly. And yet I felt nothing, as I kept hitting the same button, erasing them.
Until I got to this one. Oh, Auden, you are clearly avoiding me. There was a sigh, as familiar to me as my own face. Then, though, she said,
I suppose this is what I deserve. As always, I seem to be especially adept at alienating the few people I actually want to talk to. I don't know why that is. Maybe you've figured it out in your summer transformation. I wonder.
I pulled the phone away, looking down at it. The message was from 2 days ago at around 5 p.m. Where had I been when she'd left it? Probably alone as well. In the office at Clementine's, here in my room, or somewhere in between. I thought of my mother, sitting at her kitchen table with Hollis off working at a bank, and me, for all she knew, riding in a car with boys while wearing a pink bikini. How different we had to be from what she had expected, or planned, all those days when, like Heidi, she rocked us and carried us and cared for us. It was so easy to disown what you couldn't recognize, to keep yourself apart from things that were foreign and unsettling. The only person you can be sure to control, always, is yourself. Which is a lot to be sure of, but at the same time, not enough. Now, as there was another round of laughter from downstairs, I hit number one on my speed dial and waited.
Hello?
Mom, it's me. A pause. Then, Auden, how are you?
I'm okay, I said.
It felt strange, talking to her after all this time. How are you?
Well, she said, I suppose I'm okay also.
My mother was not the touchy-feely type. Never had been. But there was something in her voice, in that message,
that gave me the courage to say what I did next. Mom, can I ask you something? I could hear her hesitate before she said,
Yes, of course.
When you and Dad decided to split up, was that... Did you do it right away, or did you, like, try and work it out for a long time first? I don't know what she'd been expecting me to ask, but based on the long silence that followed, it wasn't this. Finally, she said,
We tried very hard to stay together. The divorce was not a decision we made lightly, if that's what you're asking. Is that what you're asking?
I don't know. I looked down at my book, my pad lined up beside it. I guess. Forget it. I'm sorry.
No, it's all right.
Her voice was closer to the phone now, filling my ear.
Auden, what's going on? Why are you thinking about this now?
I was embarrassed, suddenly, to realize that I had a lump in my throat. God, what was wrong with me? I swallowed, then said, It's just... Dad and Heidi are having problems.
Problems? She repeated. What kind of problems?
From downstairs I heard another round of laughter. I said, He moved out a couple of weeks ago. She exhaled slowly. The kind of sound someone makes as they watch a baseball fly over a fence, way, way gone.
Oh, my. I'm sorry to hear that.
Are you? I said this without really realizing it, and instantly regretted how surprised I sounded. Her tone was a bit sharper as she said,
Well, of course. One never likes to see a marriage in trouble, especially when a child is involved.
And just like that, I was crying. The tears just came, filling my eyes and spilling over, and I sucked in a breath in an attempt to maintain my composure.
Auden, are you all right?
I looked out my window at the ocean again, so steady and vast, seemingly never changing and yet always in flux. I guess I just wish, I said, my voice wavering, that I'd done some things differently.
Ah, she said, like she understood totally, even with so little given. Subtext indeed. Don't we all?
Maybe with normal mothers and daughters, it was more straightforward. They had the kind of back and forth that left no ambiguity or question, saying exactly what they meant, when they meant it. But my mom and I weren't normal. So this, stilted and vague as it might be, was the closest we'd come to each other in ages. It was like reaching out for someone's hand, then missing their fingers or even their arm and hitting their shoulder instead. But no matter. You hang on tight anyway. For a moment, we just sat there on the line, neither of us saying anything. Finally, I said, I should go. My friends are downstairs.
Of course. She coughed. Call me tomorrow, though.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. Good night, Auden.
Good night. I closed my phone, then put it on the bed, on top of my textbook, and walked over to the door. As I went down the hallway and then the stairs, I could hear that same familiar melody, playing louder than ever.
Just don't understand why suddenly we're all acting like prom night was so great, Isabel was saying.
Because it was, Morgan replied. For some of you.
Exactly, Esther said. Some of us got stuck with drunk dates who never made it out of the parking lot.
Morgan snorted. Isabel said,
Shut up.
Personally, Heidi was saying, I think prom is one of those high school things that you either really loved or really hated, like high school itself.
I loved high school, Maggie said.
Of course you did, Leah told her. You dated the hottest guy, you had the best grades, and everyone loved you.
You never wanted everyone to love you, Esther said to Leah.
I wouldn't have minded if somebody did, though, she replied.
My high school boyfriend broke my heart, remember? Maggie told her.
Mine too, Morgan sighed. God, that sucked.
He was a tool, Isabel told her. Way too much hair gel.
Now Esther snorted. Leah said,
Shut up.
See, though, Heidi said, This is such a good theme. People who loved prom can relive the experience. People who hated it get another shot. Everyone wins.
Except the losers stuck doing 300 favors, Leah grumbled.
Then she looked up and saw me.
Hey. You decide to come be a loser too?
I swallowed, aware of Heidi looking at me, noticing my red eyes, her expression suddenly concerned.
You bet, I said.
Maggie scooted over in her chair, making a space for me, and I sat down beside her.
So, Isabel said, Auden, prom love or prom hate?
Prom hate, I replied. I got stood up.
There was a round of gasps.
You what? Morgan said. That's terrible.
And, Leah added, the guy is down here now and won't stop texting her.
You know what you should do? Morgan said. You should ask him to the beach bash and then stand him up.
Morgan, Isabel raised her eyebrows. Listen to you going all vigilante.
I think, Heidi said, that you should find someone you really want to go with and do it right. That's my opinion.
I don't know, I said. I think it's a little late for that.
Not necessarily, Leah told me. It's ladies' night at Tally Ho.
I smiled.
No, no, no to Tally Ho.
That's my girl. Maggie beamed, then bumped me with her shoulder.
Everyone laughed, and just like that, the conversation shifted, jumping to another topic. It was fast and furious. The talking, the emotion, the back and forth and forth and back. I realized that if I tried to focus on it too much, I got overwhelmed. So I just decided to relax into it, bumpy and crazy as it might be. And try for once to just go along for the ride. Chapter 16.
Wow, nice road burn.
I looked up to see Adam standing in the doorway to Heidi's office, a box under one arm. Well, I said, putting down my tube of Neosporin, which I'd been applying to the latest scrape on my shin. The result of a wobbly crash that morning.
I guess that's one way of looking at it. It's the only way.
He put the box down on the file cabinet, then yanked up his shirt, showing me a scar on his stomach.
See this? 7th grade, wiped out on a ramp. And then here, he slid up his shirt sleeve, showing another shiny white spot. I crashed on a mountain bike trail when I hit a log.
Ouch.
But the pièce de résistance, he continued, tapping his chest, is right here. All titanium, baby.
I just looked at him.
What is?
The plate they used to put my sternum back together, he replied cheerfully. 2 years ago, broke it with my full-face helmet going over a jump.
You know, I said, considering my scrape again, you're kind of making me look like a wimp.
Not at all, he smiled. It all counts. If you're not getting hurt, you're not riding hard enough.
Then I said, am riding really hard.
That's what I hear, he said, picking up the box again. Maggie says you're like an animal out there.
I was horrified. She what?
I'm paraphrasing, he said easily, flipping his hand. She says you're really working hard, that you're doing great.
I shrugged, capping the Neosporin.
I don't know. If I was good, I wouldn't be all banged up like this.
Not true. I looked up at him.
No?
He shook his head.
Of course not. Look at me. I'm a great rider, and I've bit dirt more times than I can even count. And the pros? They're like bionic. They've crashed so much. Look at Eli. He's broken his elbow and his collarbone multiple times. And then there's that arm thing.
Wait, I said. The arm thing? You mean the scar?
Yeah.
I thought that was from the accident.
Adam shook his head.
No, he was doing some tricks out on the pier and landed wrong, sliced it wide open on the edge of a bench. There was blood everywhere.
I looked back down at my knee scab, small and almost a perfect circle, shiny with ointment.
It all counts, Adam said again, and the bottom line is, what defines you isn't how many times you crash, but the number of times you get back on the bike. As long as it's one more, you're all good.
I smiled, looking up at him. You know, I said, you should be a motivational speaker or something.
Nah, entirely too dorky, he replied easily. Hey, is Heidi around?
No, she's at lunch. I didn't add that she was with my dad. Their first formal meeting since he moved out. Heidi had been so nervous all morning, walking around the store, straightening displays and hovering over me in the office, that I'd been relieved when she finally strapped Isby into the baby Bjorn and headed off. As soon as the door shut behind her, though, I'd gotten uneasy myself, wondering what she'd have to say when she returned.
She'll be back in an hour or so, probably.
Oh. Well, I can just leave these, then. He put the box down on the desk to my left. When I glanced at them, he added, prom shots from my yearbook days. She said she wants them for decor for the beach bash or something.
Really? I said. Can I take a look?
Sure.
I lifted the lid. Inside was a big stack of pictures, mostly 5x7s, all black and white. The one on the top was of Maggie, standing with Jake by the tailgate of a car. She had on a short, dark, A-line dress and strappy heels, her hair spilling over her shoulders. There was a corsage on her wrist, and she was laughing, holding out a bag of Doritos to Jake, who was in a tux shirt and pants, barefoot on the sand. I flipped to the next picture. Also Maggie, this time alone, the same night, standing on tiptoe to check her reflection in a mirror that said Coca-Cola across its center. In the next shot, there was Leah, in a more formal pose with a guy in a military uniform, both of them looking at the camera, followed by one of Wallace on a dance floor, cummerbund loose, in the midst of busting some sort of move. Then Maggie again, another year, in another dress, this one white and longer. In the first shot, she was walking down the boardwalk, holding the hand of someone whose shoulder alone made it into the picture. In the one beneath it, she was reaching out for the camera, fingers blurred, her mouth half open as she laughed.
"Wow," I said as I kept flipping through them. There was Leah again, Esther, Maggie, Wallace and Leah, Jake and Esther, Maggie, Wallace and Esther, Maggie, Maggie, Maggie.
I looked up at him.
"You're not in any of these."
"Nah, I was always behind the camera."
I moved past yet another shot of Maggie, this time on a bike, her white dress gathered up in one hand, her helmet in the other.
"Lots of her here."
He kept his eyes on the picture, his tone noncommittal. As he said,
"I guess so."
"What are you guys looking at?"
Adam and I both jumped as Maggie herself, in the flesh and flip-flops and jeans, appeared behind us in the doorway. "Prom pictures," I told her, casually flipping back to the one of Leah and Wallace. "Heidi wanted them for the beach bash."
"Oh, no," she sighed, then stepped forward to lean over my shoulder. "I can't bear to... Look. Junior year. Leah's date was that Marine, remember?"
Adam nodded.
"I do.
And I had my white dress. I loved that dress."
She sighed again, this time happily, and reached over to flip to the next picture.
"There it is!
Man, I agonized over that outfit like you would not believe. Kept it clean all night, even when I was on a bike on a dare. Then Jake threw up all over it on the way home. The stain
never came out," Adam finished for her. "I have a shot of it somewhere."
"Hopefully not in this box."
She plucked out the one of her on the bike. "That was a great night, though. I mean, until the end. What other ones are in there? Any more of me?" I felt Adam glance at me as I eased the box shut, saying, "Not really."
"Oh," she said. "Well, I guess that's a good thing. I don't think I necessarily want my prom memories up on display for the whole town to see anyway."
"No," I said. "It seems like you had a pretty good time."
She shrugged. "I guess. But I was with Jake then. The last thing I need right now is another reminder of how much of my life I wasted on him."
"You were happy at the time, though," I said. "That has to count for something."
"I don't know," Maggie said. "Lately I've been thinking it would have been better to have just been by myself. That way, at least all of high school wouldn't be, you know, tinged with his memory."
"Tinged?" Adam said. "Is that even a real word?"
"You know what I mean," she said, poking his arm. "Anyway, my point is that if I'd wised up to what he was sooner, my entire experience might have been different."
"Yeah," I said. "You could have spent all of high school alone and never gone to prom at all."
"Exactly," she replied. "And that might have been good, too.
Or even better." I looked down at the box again, remembering all those shots inside, trying to picture myself in even one of them. What if I'd had a boyfriend? What if I'd gone to the prom? What kind of tinge could I have had, given another chance?
"Maybe," I said to Maggie. "Or maybe not."
She gave me a weird look, then opened her mouth to say something, but then the front door chime sounded.
"Duty calls,"
she said, turning on her heel, and then she was thwacking back down the hallway, her voice cheery as she greeted a group of customers. Adam watched her go, then leaned back in the door jamb.